Okay, we're still in chapter 4, moving away from people. We're on page 94. The need for self-sufficiency, that is a sense of self-sufficiency inside of a person. We're talking about the kind of person who moves away from others, who avoids involvement with others and tries to experience a sense of not needing other people. And Elder Simeon says, it's as if this type is creating an enclosing wall around himself, and up to this wall, he allows others to approach him. From that point on, he'll do everything he can to prevent anyone from coming even a little further, in order to prevent any kind of beginning of communication. So it's someone who deals with life by avoiding communication with others. And so the very first need this person feels is to have some self-sufficiency. Down to the middle of that paragraph, it's natural for him to do everything he can so that he can cope with things by himself. He does everything to be self-sufficient. He amazes people because of his capacity to find solutions in his ordinary daily life amongst other people, solutions where he doesn't need to turn to others. Today, Elder Simeon says, everybody is more or less affected by this illness that we're speaking about, or by the other two, moving toward others or moving against others. I'm going to go jump over to the middle of page 95. This type is the person who constantly needs solitude. Even before God, he wants to remain alone. He's terrified that God sees everything and knows everything. And so it's a person that tries to hide from God, even though that's not possible. The fact that nothing escapes God and God's eye terrifies such a person. Down to the middle of the last paragraph on this page. This kind of a person, this kind of a strategy for dealing with life, makes us a kind of person who doesn't want anyone inside of the enclosure of the wall that he builds around himself, except for himself. This is frightful. It can happen to many people, particularly people who are Christian, people who have a relationship with God and with the church, who have a relationship, next page, with other Christians, but all up to a point. From that point on, don't let anyone, some Christian or especially some priest, or even God himself, come further into the soul. This type can't trust in God. He ends up being that Christian who's doing fine. That's what he always says or thinks or feels. But deep down, he still doesn't have communion with God. He still doesn't have contact with God. The light of God hasn't come into this secret darkness inside him. Jumping down to about four sentences from the end of this paragraph. This Christian doesn't feel that the other existences pass into him and his own existence passes into the other existences. Now that's a good place to reflect on that particular comment, I think. Because Elder Simeon is saying that the reality is that my life passes into the life of everyone that I meet, and their life passes into me. The kind of strategy of self-protection that we're talking about here tries to keep that from happening. Now, if we're mostly concerned about protecting ourselves from others, we're not going to be aware of the effect that we have on others. We always have an effect on other people around us. We're always trying to kind of figure other people out and figure out how to react to them, figure out how to deal with them. And if there is someone like this, then when they have contact with other people, those other people are going to be affected by how this person is. They'll see somebody who doesn't let anybody find anything out about them, somebody who's really difficult to get to know. A lot of us are like this, depending on the particular situation. If there is a situation, an environment we're not familiar with, we might use this kind of strategy to protect ourselves. Remember that each one of these three ways of leaving the place where we ought to be, open to God, seeking to know him, doing all the things that we need to do to get things out of the way so that we can know God and reveal ourselves to him. That's where we're supposed to be. We move away from that and toward others or against others or away from others. Each one of those, remember, is moving away from where we ought to be. Let me ask if this is something that is difficult for you to relate to. And it might, this idea of protecting ourselves from others by not letting them see into us.
I may be like that a little bit. But I find myself wanting to, I have the desire to want to connect at a higher level with people, and instead of just talking about football or whatever, you know,
right,
what I mean?
Right.
I mean, I like football, but you know,
sure.
I have that desire to want to, but I find it hard to do at the same time to connect at that higher level. I remember one time you mentioned something about coffee hour being an extension of what goes on in there, and
right.
I'm like, yes, that's what I want too.
Yeah,
but I don't seem to have what it takes to help make it happen. But I mean, I desire that.
Right, right. Which would be different than intentionally. Again, we have to remember that what Elder Simeon is trying to do is to make us inquisitive about what might be going on at a level in ourselves that we're not entirely conscious of. I mean, we could at a conscious level that we're aware of ourselves. I mean, there are a lot of things going on inside of us that we're not fully aware of, as he talked about in the beginning. And those things come up and they express themselves, and whenever we do something that surprises us, you know, sometimes we will do something or say something that we wouldn't have expected to say, or flash of anger that's not characteristic for us. There are things that are going on inside of us that we're not aware of. And it may be that at that deeper level, we are self-protected, you know. And that may be why we find it difficult to open up to other people, to care about other people in a deep kind of way. So there's that part too. It's not just necessarily, he's not criticizing our actions. I think that's something that's, it's easy to get defensive about as we consider the things that he's talking to us about, and we think, well, I don't think I do that, or well, maybe I do that a little bit, but it's not really what I want to do. I mean, he's not criticizing us. In fact, he makes a real effort, I think, to put things in such a way that they don't make us want to defend ourselves. When we do that, there's that wall right there. So he's trying to be as gentle as he can. And he encourages us to make the effort to have things be different. Although he recognizes here, at the bottom of page 96, he says that if this is something that goes on inside of us, it's a situation that is difficult to get rid of. He compares it over in the middle of the first new paragraph on the next page, 97, to granite, hardness inside of ourselves, where we just, that's the way we are, it seems like, from long, long years growing up into this kind of situation where we accept that the way we look out across the mountains, they're permanent fixtures, and there are permanent fixed things inside of ourselves that we don't even think of as being anything other than just the way we are. Well, that's the way I am. There are a lot of things that we just feel like, well, this is the way I am. Elder Simeon is encouraging us to consider the possibility that these things could be changed, that the way we are is not the way we're meant to be. But he says, in order for granite, something as hard as and permanent as certain things have become for us, in order for granite to melt, and granite can melt, I mean, we see flowing lava, you know, from a volcano, you know, where it's so hot under the surface of the earth that stone itself melts and flows like water. But for granite to melt, he says, it requires a very high temperature, a great temperature of faith. What is required, first of all, I think, is for one to understand things in this way, to see them in this way, to accept that this is how things are. that there is something hard in us that is keeping us from making spiritual progress, and to make a decision about the hardness that's in us, whatever hardness it happens to be. It might be a hardness of will that compels us to move against others, or it might be some kind of hardness of fear that compels us to seek the protection of another person and be kind of their sidekick. Or it might be the kind of hardness that we're talking about in this third way of moving away from people. This hardness that has been established inside of a person that distances his soul from God and from people. And to set that hardness inside of ourselves down into God's fire. This, however, is exactly what this type of person doesn't want to do. It's exactly the opposite of everything that person who is moving away from people is trying to do, to protect themselves by having something that is solid, rock hard, that other people can't change. It's a desperate will to remain as we are. It's going to take recognition that things are not as they ought to be in us for us to do this kind of thing. But, he finishes up this section, as soon as one understands it, he must say, whether I want to or not, it has to happen. In other words, we have a freedom of will to decide that we want to not have things continue the way they are. And if a person begins acting in that way, sooner or later God's fire will melt this hardness. God will enter his soul. Heaven will open and he will become a Christian and taste this new life. Then he'll know within him more fully what Christian means and how a Christian lives. The next heading then is closed off in a compulsive way. We're saying about how he's not criticizing us and saying, well, you've been doing this. You need to really stop doing that. It's not that simple. He's talking about something that is more firmly established in us than that, where we can't just say, okay, well, I won't do that anymore. He's talking about something where we are compelled to act in a certain way, so that it takes work for things to be different. Our topic is that type who seeks independence, isolation, solitude. Personally, I believe that a person is what he is from his birth, but he also becomes what he becomes as he lives in society. Each of us has a certain sort of disposition from birth of one sort or another, a specific personality. Then along come our parents, our teachers, the neighborhood, life's events, life's adversities, and all these things make their contribution. So in the end, our character is shaped and we belong to a certain type. Of course, we can have the other types too, not just one. Remember, it's like he's calling these ways of trying to deal with other people diseases. And we can have more than one illness at the same time. We might have a cold, but we might also have something else. Doctors give you medicine for something and it cures it, and then you're still sick because there's something else. Usually they try to take care of the things that are causing the most difficulty in terms of your symptoms. All of us have these three options as far as ways of avoiding being the way we ought to be, and we use the ones that work best for us, he's told us. Some may belong to that type of person who is attached to others, who depends on others and can't live without this dependence. Others may belong to that type that considers everybody their enemy, quarrels with everybody, and can't discern in anybody a disposition of goodness, of cooperation. Everybody is uncooperative, it seems like. They are all dangerous. You have to be careful of them. And he has to take a defensive position toward all of them. Yet others may belong to the third type, which seeks independence, isolation, solitude within yourself, is what he's talking about. Now I'm going to jump over to page 101 in the middle to continue. This kind of person is the person who wants his life to be an exception. He doesn't want to live as others live. You can think of the person that moves toward others and wants to be like a sidekick or something like that, or go along with a group, you'll be accepted into a group. This is not that kind of person. This kind of person wants to not live as others live. He or she will find some way of doing things differently from others. Beginning of the next paragraph, this person particularly aims at superiority. Well, superiority in their own eyes, though. The first type, the compliant type, the attached one, seeks superiority too, and the other, who quarrels with everyone, seeks it as well. But we could say that this last type seeks superiority much more. He is the one who, more than the others, rests in this feeling of superiority because he's always alone, independent. He's always closed in on himself. How can he feel comfortable if he doesn't have the idea that he has a special value? And this sense of having a special value nourishes him, satisfies him, relaxes him. When he loses it, then he has a real problem to try to reestablish that sense of being special. And sometimes he's made to look completely ridiculous because it's obvious because of things that happen to a person that they're not the kind of person that they try to pretend to themselves to be. Life's events and situations will sometimes contradict him. Page 102. Something will happen in life, middle of the paragraph on the right-hand side, so that the person finally sees that he isn't exceptional, isn't some kind of genius, doesn't have a special value, that he himself isn't something he can rely on. The kind of person we're talking about is relying on himself as having some special value, and that's what they defend. They defend that idea of themselves as being special and being different. And you can build it, a person can build this up out of, you know, almost anything. Even a hobby or something. Other people don't care about this. They don't realize how important it is. They don't realize how significant it is. But I realize how significant it is. And then something might happen where they see, well, this is just not that important. I'm really not that exceptional. And so we're talking about humility, you know, which is the only cure for this kind of self-oriented, self-fed pride. Next new paragraph, three sentences down. He believes that his whole existence deep inside is a great treasure, and he expects others to see this treasure and recognize him. It takes offense when other people don't see how special he is. He expects them to see his worth. As Karen Horney says, he imagines himself as a solitary tree on some hilltop, and all the other people are like trees on the sides of the hill, none of which stand out. They are all the same. He's the only tree that is on the hilltop and stands out. And finally, second to the last paragraph on the next page, we'll finish up this section. If the person begins to understand, and he makes a decision to begin to humble himself before God and to try to exercise a little courage to release himself with confidence into God's hands, God will find a way to enter into this person's very own dark basement, into his own dark and hard soul, and transform his existence and make him a true man, a true Christian. So the point here is that our part is the humility and the openness to God, the trust of him, not trying to keep him out, but to let him do what needs to be done. And then he'll also see other people as true human beings and have true contact and true communion with them, and will proceed from grace to grace until he is perfected in Christ Jesus. Okay, comments, discussion. How about you, Steve? Is this something that you can see in yourself? Or I can see that I do one time or another more than one of these three. And I can see, looking back over my life, where there were times in my life where other of the three dominated the way I tried to deal with things. That isn't dominant now, but it's still, I can fall back into it because I've found another one that works better later in life. Maybe one of them works well for us when we're young, and then things change. You know, there are life events that get us moving in some kind of different direction. The problem is that we move from one of these ways of being as we ought not to be to another way of being as we ought not to be. Instead of going to the center, although I can remember, I mean, in terms of my conversion to Orthodoxy, there was a time of terrific spiritual struggle in my life where I fought my way free of several of these things, one more than the other, and into a determination not to be cut off from others and from God. And then, after that, then you have to start working on yourself as far as the things that separate you by our dependence on our temptations, our vices. But this book is about having some kind of psychological or emotional blocks that keep us from getting to the point that we can even seriously work on ourselves spiritually. We've got to at least find where the center is. For example, if we're talking about prayer, we have to know what stance, as Elder Simeon said at the beginning of the book, we ought to be taking before God in prayer, and what stance we ought to be taking before others. If we can have at least some sense of that, then we can realize how far away we are from it, whether we're away from it by moving toward others or against others. Some days, a bad day, we might be entirely dependent on someone. Another bad day, we might be moving against others in an aggressive kind of way. Another day, we might be withdrawn. We pass from one to the other. It's like there's more than one kind of bad weather. Things are always changing. I always feel like internally, the things that go on inside of us are so much like the weather that takes place outside. I mean, there's freezing rain, and there is the heat of summer, the noonday devil. The weather that's outside and the weather that's inside have a kind of similarity, and we have to do what we need to do in order to be able to deal with them so that we can be more centered in the way we should be before God, before others. It takes effort to try to do that. Okay. Okay. Page 104. In this section, we're dealing with the type who aims at isolation, who wants to withdraw from others, to distance himself from others. He moves within negativity. So this is saying no, basically. The other two types move in affirmation. A person who moves toward others, it's a positive, it's an affirmation. It's saying yes to something. The person who moves against others, the activity is a positive, it's doing something. But this kind, this third kind, he says, is saying no. No, I don't want to. No, I don't want to act by moving toward others. I just want to be left in peace. Leave me alone. Let me be inside of myself. He doesn't want people to approach him, to influence him, to obligate him to do anything. So you see, the other two are saying yes to something. This way is saying no. The top of page 105, middle of the paragraph, he takes all possible steps to avoid changing himself in any basic sense or any basic way, so that his personality will remain what it is. I'm going to jump down to the middle of the first paragraph after the new heading. Every human being who comes into this world has a consciousness of his existence. Every human being who comes into this world is a person. It's given by God for someone to do everything to preserve his personality. In the good sense, his freedom. Next paragraph. A person grows up from childhood. He confronts various difficulties, various onslaughts in life. What's an onslaught? You know, some kind of an attack, sudden attack. When he doesn't know the appropriate way to confront these things, we all go through that. He's going to protect himself and in this way preserve his personality, top of 106. His first principle, middle of the paragraph, is that he must save himself, his good self, his real self. But in the end, a sickness sets in because we depend on ourselves. in an unhealthy condition. He's closed himself off. This closure is a compulsive action, you see, out of fear, fight or flight. So fight, that's one of the other ways of dealing with things. This is flight. It's negative in the sense that he's not capable of acting differently, and it's a compulsion. It's not something freely chosen. The other two things are compulsions too, moving toward others and moving against others, but this is a compulsion. I'd like to say this in closing this section. God made man free, put him in paradise. What does it mean to say that he made him free? It means God made him pure, clean, with a natural and spontaneous inner tendency toward good, toward God. But man also had the potential to say no to God and take the other path, which is in fact what he did. So this no of the person who flees from others, wants to be independent inside of himself, Elder Simeon seems to be saying that this is a saying no to God as well as to others. God respects this freedom. God honors it. He honored it not only when he made man free, but still today when man is sinful and fallen and not free because of our response, no matter which one of these ways of abandoning closeness to God we choose. If a human being is to be saved, God wants him free. God will not save us at the cost of our freedom. God wants us to come freely to him, to remain free, and to live as a man of God, free. This is the first and most important principle. Even in this type who withdraws, who isolates himself and ends up in an unwholesome condition, there are three main points in the next section: unpleasant consequences of opening up to others. This type that preserves solitude, isolation, distances himself from people, acts this way because he wants to preserve his personality, his deepest being. The whole mistake is precisely in this. Man was fashioned by God and refashioned by Christ in such a way as to preserve his personhood in one piece and at the same time to be completely in communion, certainly in God, with other human beings. The type that moves away from people doesn't succeed in this. He thinks that exactly at the moment that he comes into communion with other people, he loses his personhood, his personality. I have a few cases in mind, he says. Now this is critical. This is really central. People don't open up to others out of fear. People are compelled to act against others as a kind of, the best defense is a good offense. You know, that's the second type. People do that because they feel like if they don't do it, they're going to just not be who they are anymore. They think of what it means to be who they are as doing whatever it is that they do in order to keep from getting lost or disappearing into being like everybody else. Both the aggressive person who believes that, and it's not even belief, it's a compulsion. You've come across this way of acting that works for you. It's more like that. It's not something you believe in or think is positive or good. In fact, you might not even think it is good. And yet you have a compulsion to do with that because you have confidence in that strategy in order to keep from feeling that you're being just consumed by others or disappearing or being made to be unimportant. So whether you do it by acting in such a way where the best defense is a good offense, or whether you're one of the people who believes in building walls to protect yourself, that's why people have a compulsion to do one or the other, or becoming part of a group. They don't worry about being consumed by the group. Now, the other two type of people, they might worry about it, but somebody who gloms on to a group or a certain powerful person, they do it in such a way that it's a defensive thing. And sometimes people will surprise us. If you try to protect such a person, they might just go find somebody else maybe just cling to the very person that has been mean to them. And it's shocking. But their relationship to that person, who may be abusive in some way, spiritually or even physically, it's still a way of protecting themselves that makes it impossible for them to be really in communion with another person. Okay, we need the examples that he has. People who consider themselves wronged by others, who hadn't found affection, love, not even in their families, from their father, from their mother, when they grew up, cultivated the tactic of isolating themselves, withdrawing within themselves. And when some person turns up in their lives, who, whether they were phony, hypocritical, or not, had managed to somehow unlock their soul, to open a door in the wall, top of page 108, in which their soul was enclosed, and afterward, in this example, this person proves to be a liar, a disaster takes place. When something like that happens, then you really draw back. It's worse than it was before. It's a crisis in a person's life. Once in its life, this soul decided to open up, to come into communion with another person, and it was burned more than it could bear. This happened not only because it was deceived, cheated, betrayed, you might say, but also because it didn't know how to remain untouched as a person. And at the same time, come into communion with other human beings. It's extremely difficult to reconcile these two things. So what's being said here is that, on the one hand, we don't want to give ourselves up to something that isn't good and go along with something that isn't good in order to remain having a sense of who we are because we're involved with somebody, you know, because we lose ourselves if we do that. But on the other hand, we do want to have closeness and communion with another person. How do you do that? Well, we can't do it unless we give up these three ways of establishing oneness and communion with others. That won't work. Moving toward them, accepting whatever the group goes along with, and having a sense of being part of the group, we lose ourselves when that happens. And we can't have communion with others if we disappear into ourselves. We can't have communion with others if we assume they're all enemies and we move against them. So how do we have communion with other human beings and at the same time not lose ourselves by following one of these three ways of being related to other people that don't work? Okay, now he has a solution for us, I think, if we're patient. The top of page 109, when this type, this moving away from people type, who builds a wall inside of themselves and tries to live inside of that walled, protected area, when this type is compelled, forced by a given situation to remain a little with other people and associate with them and to come into some kind of communication with them, he can suffer what we call a nervous breakdown. What he means by that is that he loses his sense of security. So things are not working. The thing that this person has depended on to hold things together all of a sudden breaks down, loses his security. And he has examples in the middle of the next paragraph. As soon as a woman discovers that her husband is lying to her about certain matters, or when someone expects something from his boss and his request isn't accepted, little events of this type can lead a person who seeks solitude to a nervous breakdown. Now, this is not a technical term in the way that he's using it. He just means that the strategy for holding things together that the person has been using has broken down. Three sentences down. Both the person himself who suffers and those around him who see him figure that this crisis is because of some particular thing that happened during the day. Something that happened at work, things didn't go the way they were supposed to, something didn't turn out right. But that little event, he's saying, is a trigger. The little thing that happened, whether it's some slight that somebody made against us or things didn't turn out the way we had hoped they were doing in some kind of minor way, and all of a sudden there's catastrophe. Well, the point is that it wasn't that little event. That little event was a trigger for something more major. People might think that this breakdown comes from the little event, from this insignificant occurrence, but actually, top of page 110, we see that it isn't possible to get that catastrophic result from that little occurrence. Next paragraph. In these circumstances, we have to search deeper. Then we'll discover the root of the illness, the person who is withdrawn into himself. If they didn't have that unstable source of stability, it wouldn't have happened. His security is in that trying to keep isolated from others. Inside this tower of his, inside this fortress, he feels secure. And when he is compelled by some situation to come out from behind that wall, then he loses his sense of who he is. That's the catastrophe. It's because of the illness, not because of that minor event. Okay, middle of the next paragraph. He thinks, this is on the right-hand side of the middle of the next paragraph, he thinks he'll be lost inside the chaos of other human beings and lose his uniqueness. But what he thinks is unique is what he's made up inside of himself, this little walled-off area of protection. All of us have more or less this impression that we are something unique, and that is true up to a certain point. But most of all, this person is afraid that he'll go crazy. Not that he'll lose his mind, but that he'll become completely disorganized. That he'll split apart, that his personality will be dismantled. It's very frightening. So this third type, who is dependent on this sense of self-reliance, is in a certain kind of way, an even more vulnerable situation. As I think part of what he's saying. Top of 111. These things happen precisely because this person very deeply didn't learn to come into normal, true communion with other people. Just can't handle it and confront life's events correctly. He learned only one thing, to run away. To run away. Last paragraph. The whole secret is here. The person who is reborn in Christ Jesus is really reborn. He's reborn from his roots. So if our roots have this illness, then that illness can be dealt with by getting back to that center of the way we ought to be before God and others. He's reborn from his roots, from the depths of his existence. His personhood itself is reborn. Not that false sense of who we are anymore. And he doesn't merely perform a few religious duties or have a few Christian habits where we can just stay exactly where we were before. This person not only maintains his personality unharmed, but also, just as true love works, he comfortably comes into contact with other people and confronts with ease all those things he's going to encounter in life. He struggles, he's hurt, he gets tired, but in the end, he conquers. Last page in the chapter, 112. If at a little at a time a human being begins to understand what's happening to him and makes a decision to begin to humble himself before God and to try to take a little courage to let himself go with faith into God's hands, God will find a way to enter his dark basement, his dark and hard soul, and to transform his existence and make him a true human being, a Christian. Last paragraph on the page. Salvation is given for free, and it's extremely easy. But people get things mixed up and seek salvation elsewhere. That's why we go in one direction, or the second, or the third, each one of those wrong strategies, seeking salvation elsewhere. If I'm going to be safe, I have to be part of this group and do things the way they do it, and even if some of the things are not good. Or if I'm going to be safe, I have to always be aggressive and make sure there aren't any enemies that can't hurt me, and the ones that are no threat, I just don't even have any respect for them. Or to disappear into ourselves and protect ourselves in ways that fall apart too easily. Each one of those is an effort to find salvation elsewhere other than through Christ. People get things mixed up and seek salvation elsewhere, since deep inside lives the ego, and there lives selfishness. There lives this love of ourselves, which begins from the day that the first created fell. With the fall, the first created stopped looking to God and began to look to themselves. They turned toward themselves. Each one of those three strategies is a different way of doing that, seeking salvation where there is no salvation. Okay, that's the end of chapter 4. What do you think of that chapter? This third way is different than the other two.
Yeah, with the... Now, the third way, we're talking about...
Moving away from others.
The moving away from others.
Trying to have inner independence. I don't need anybody. I'm fine. I don't need to move toward others. I don't need to move against them.
Yeah.
I don't need it. No, thank you. I am a rock. I am an island. We're back to Simon and Garfunkel.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's the Simon and Garfunkel. It wasn't their solution, but it's the one they're singing about. Okay, well, next time, we'll move into chapter 5, 115 through 125. And this is about the idealized image. Remember that back in the beginning, Elder Simeon said that what happens is each one of us, depending on what we've got to work with, we've all got something to work with. It's different for each of us. We have our circumstances when we grow up, and the parents that we have, the family that we grow up in, or maybe the lack of family. But we had a particular sequence, series of life events that molded us in terms of, and molded what? Well, it molded what we have to work with, the way we are to begin with. And during going through that life process, we learn to depend on one of these three possibilities more than the others, and the other two when they're necessary. So we've always got something else we can whip out if our main thing doesn't work that good. But one of the things that we try to do, one of the goals is to have these things fit together so that they are a description of who we think we are. And then we come to believe, that's me, that's who I am. And we start to idealize that image of ourselves that we have. And anything that doesn't fit into it, that's not good, as far as we're concerned. Anything that fits and helps us to function in that kind of way, which is already messed up, you know. Anything that helps is good. Anything that threatens our ability to function that way is bad. So each one of us has a way of saying, well, I don't care for this. I like that, but I don't like this. It all has to do with the way we put ourselves together in order to be able to deal with life independently of God, on our own. And whatever we've come up with, that becomes our ideal image of ourselves. That's what we believe in. Any threat to it, we're going to fight it. People interfering with it. This book tries to interfere with it. And we have lots of good ways of keeping that from happening, even while we read the book. So the next chapter has to do with pointing out to us that that is what we all do, and that we are identifying with a fantasy. That this is not a God-created self-image. It's a self-image that we've created, you know, that works for me, you know. So that'll be the next task, more or less, to look into that, to try to understand how that works.